All of this process is monitored 24 hours a day by a radio system in town. Every single well is constantly testing the current pH chlorine levels.
Yep.
And if any of those get out of a range that we have predetermined set,
sure,
the well will shut down.
Okay.
So everything is programmed with multiple fail safes to shut down if any of the chemical gets out of whack, any of the flows drop out for some reason, mm-hmm. you suck the well dry, it will shut off. And it's all designed to shut itself down and alert the operators immediately via cell phone calls.
This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio session. This session is the third of three on the Franklin water supply. Shares my conversation with Doug Martin and Jake Stanley. Doug's the water and sewer superintendent. Jake is the assistant water and sewer superintendent. We had our conversation in the Franklin Public Radio Studios on Hutchinson Street. And as I said, this is the third of the three-part series. Links to the first two, in case you missed those, will be available in the show notes so you can catch up. This one runs approximately 28 minutes. We've discussed the water treatment process, consumer confidence report. We talk about the enterprise account and the usage-based services, quarterly billing, how the capital funding is done, all that as part of the enterprise account. It's good to know as well, towards the end, the water sewer world of infrastructure is the thing for consideration. Job security and regular challenges. The industry is facing 60% of the workforce retiring in the next 10 years. So that may be just be an incentive to listen in, find out what's going on in the Franklin water supply.
Piece that I always like, kind of what we've talked to a little bit here, is the flow chart on the back in terms of the water treatment process. We've kind of touched on it in aspects of our conversation so far, but to kind of, you know, have that one kind of go through.
Right.
Do you want to run us through?
Yeah, so this is actually the department that I worked in for about 7 years, before I moved up to the assistant superintendent position. This is a really basic idea of what goes on at every well source in town.
Right.
Every well source has on-site treatment for it, with the exception of the Grove Street plant and the Fisher Street plant. Those are a more elaborate process with the filtration added in.
Yeah.
But as far as all of our wells are concerned, we have a single wellhead pumping water out of the ground, raw water from the wells, that is pumped into a separate building in most cases, where we have the chemical addition situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have injectors going right into the water main. We have chemicals stored on site, and everything is added through a chemical dosing pump.
Yep.
All of which is regulated by our operators. We add potassium hydroxide, for the potassium hydroxide is there to regulate the pH.
Mm-hmm.
Our water coming out of the ground in town is roughly a pH of 5.8 to a 6.1, depending on where in town you are.
Right.
You know, a neutral pH is a 7. So we try to get our water up to about a 7.2, 7.5 to make it all balance. The fluoride, as I stated, is added for the dental hygiene.
Yes. Yeah.
And the sodium hypochlorite is added for disinfection. It's the chlorine. Now, several of our sites have the metaphosphate, the sodium hexametaphosphate. That mm-hmm. is the industry term on that is Calgon.
Okay.
It's a sequestration tool. So it takes the iron and manganese, doesn't actually remove it, but it sequesters it to the sides of the pipe, keeps it from getting into your source.
Okay.
And that's what we're essentially flushing out. We flush the system every year. We scour the edges of the pipe and get that out of there. And the sodium hexametaphosphate is only added, I believe, at 3 of our sites at the moment.
Okay.
So that's it's not a across-the-board addition of chemical, only at the mm-hmm. sites that need it.
Sure.
So once we've gone through that, it immediately goes with that chemical in mind. It then heads right out to the system, off to the services, and off to the tanks in town itself.
Mm-hmm.
All of this process is monitored 24 hours a day by a radio system in town. Every single well is constantly testing the current pH chlorine levels.
Yep.
And if any of those get out of a range that we have predetermined set,
sure.
The well will shut down.
Okay.
So everything is programmed with multiple fail safes to shut down if any of the chemical gets out of whack, any of the flows drop out for some reason,
mm-hmm.
you suck the well dry, it will shut off. And it's all designed to shut itself down and alert the operators immediately via cell phone calls to come in and address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we have multiple systems in line
in place
that keep this system up and running. And there's this fail safes for you can't have things running other than in the automatic position.
Right.
You can't manually override stuff. And all of this system is contained within itself. There is no outside access. So there's no, it's not tied to an internet anywhere. There's no internet tie-in anywhere that cannot possibly be hacked.
Right. Yep.
It's a safe system that way where there is no outside influence. Our operators can't see it from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
We can't see it from the outside.
Right.
You have to be in the building to physically do something to
That's a good point. I know I've made it in other conversations, particularly with the town clerk, because I know the voting system having, I came to Franklin, for those who hadn't heard, to install the motor voter system for the state. For a contractor, Unisys at the time. And I know, because we did the installation, there were 350 point-to-point lines put in, Verizon circuits, although it was New England Tel or whatever it was at the time, that we did the install back in 94, 95, something like that. It's a private network. There is no other connection, which is why when the town clerk runs an election at the high school, everything has to be done on the laptop and then taken back to the town office because that's the only connection back to Ashburton Place where the Secretary of the Commonwealth has the master system and all the connections.
Right.
Just the last piece of the story. So in terms of alerts, even back in that day, because we had 350 circuits separate on the 351, but we had 350 circuits. So I had a tech who developed a little ping system, and we would get a page at 11:45 a.m. and if we had an all clear, we could go to lunch. If one of the circuits came back, something was wrong, we couldn't go to lunch until that was finished.
Gotcha.
So even that, back in those days, pre-internet, you know, we did something to at least give us a status before. And now you've got, at least in the new plant, you've got the dashboard, you know, the nice system board, similar to what we've got here in the radio studio, where you can see the flows and the alerts and anything. If something did happen, you could see it. But
yeah, we have a very nice overview system of the entire system, like you say, on one screen. And
one screen.
And that is all just in the office without any outside access.
Nobody else can get there unless you walk in the door.
Physically need to be there.
Need to be there to do it. And this whole entire process is overseen by four individuals.
Yeah.
The crew of treatment operators is four guys, as far as the stuff going on in the wells themselves.
Right.
The distribution out there, the pipes, the hydrants, the tanks and stuff, that's, you know, that's our road crew that handles that work and the treatment work together with them.
Right.
But as far as the stuff in the wells, the chemical, the alarms, that's four guys, and they do a very good job in time. And their phone can ring any time of day. Doesn't matter if it's 7 a.m. Christmas morning. There could be something going on, and you got to run in and take care of it. It's the life.
And they're all licensed operators from the state of Massachusetts,
too. Which is, I think you said at the beginning, you had that was a license that you brought in.
Or similar. There's multiple licenses out there. There's distribution and treatment, levels 1 through 4 on both. And Franklin is a
T2, so a treatment 2, and a distribution 3, D3.
Okay. So those are the top level licenses you need. All our operators don't necessarily need those, but
Jake
Doug
and I
myself
have the D3, T2s, and then our treatment operators, depending on where they are, they at least definitely need the T2, and then varying degrees of the D, depending
and
on
similar
where they are
license level. Programs, I'm assuming, and you can validate. There's usually some sort of kind of, you know, annual either retraining or maintenance for that to keep the license.
Continuing education.
Continuing education.
It's 24
absolutely.
Hours, I believe. Well, it depends on what kind
of... It depends on what levels you have and all that. Yeah, our operators are constantly going to classes. The town is very supportive of re-educating and keeping people up to date on licenses, so we're able to send all of our licensed guys to continue to keep these licenses up and get the trainings they need and stay up to date on the newest stuff.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
Technology is always changing.
From
especially
everything.
In the technology world. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and as we talked earlier, in terms of even at the meters, you know, you had to walk up to the meter and read it, which took, I think we said, what, two guys a month and a half or so to do. And now you can do the drive-by. Ultimately, the meter will send to a signal, and it'll be done more or less instantaneously whenever we need a read. So.
Yeah.
All that is technology, all that requires security, all that requires maintenance and testing and monitoring. And Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, the technology keeps growing. I've sat in an hour-long training on the use of drones and water safety. You know, using specifically flying a drone around water tanks to inspect them. You know, that's right. The kind of world we're going towards.
Sure.
And actually, we work with the police department.
Police department has two drones, I think.
They've helped us out, and we've used their drones for our annual tank inspections.
Yeah.
They jump at the opportunity because they need hours too to keep up their certification.
Yeah, and I think even in the Franklin Crossing fire was referenced, the police helped the fire department determine where they needed to go with the use of the drones as they were fighting that fire. So
yeah,
while the police may own and run them, they're multiple purpose.
Absolutely,
yeah. And I would say, just while we're talking about different departments, I think, I don't know, I can't speak for other towns, but I could say in the town of Franklin that every department is always available to each other, and we're really working very closely with each other when we need to. So
absolutely, there's no.
It's great. It's great working relationship with everyone.
Yeah, there's no animosity over jurisdictions and who's in charge here or there. Mm-hmm. Everyone just gets on board and helps out when the situation arises. So,
yeah,
very good working relationship. Franklin's very good at that.
Yeah, and I've been fortunate, having observed in my 15-plus years of reporting, there's certainly evidence of that at almost any town meeting, school meeting, where something is happening and somebody's doing something in coordination with something else.
Yeah, so especially for us, because water is everywhere, water and sewer. So we've worked with the school department, mm-hmm. we've worked with the building inspector, facilities, technology. You name it, obviously town administrator's office and all that stuff. So
because even on the technology side, well, you got a meter, but you're still gonna have a license for whatever that service is. And
we're all interconnected somehow. So
so I think one of the other topics that we haven't really covered, although we touched on and we thought we'd come back to, was kind of the funding. So sewer aside, but you've got a water enterprise account.
Correct.
That from the meters that are read, as we've talked about, that generates usage and thereby billing and people pay. So within that, it's effectively self-funding in the enterprise account for either the fixes, the services, the testing. And I believe there's, I think it's a 5-year plan for kind of the water main rebuilding, restructuring road, and then they coordinate, we'll hit that with the DPW roadside so that they'll rebuild the road at the time that you're doing the water main rebuild, etc.
Correct, so like you said, it's an enterprise account, which means we're a user-based, you know, service. So as a user, you're hooked up to our water service, you use the water, you pay us for that water. All that money stays in our water enterprise account. It doesn't go to the general fund in town.
Mm-hmm.
Stays in the account, and it's used to obviously fund our, you know, operation, maintenance, our salaries, expenses, as well as our capital expenses.
Sure.
So, the town, through the DPW and the engineer's office, have developed a 5-year program. I think we're on our second 5-year program, if I'm not mistaken.
If I recall,
So what that means is I think we're on pace to replace all the water main in town within the next 80 years.
We are the only municipality, I believe, in the country
that has that plan
in place. So right now what we're tackling, and it's a twofold thing. Obviously, we're looking at our older infrastructure, older water mains, sewer mains, but we're also looking at the roads. So we might have a road that really is in a state of disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
Water main maybe not be on top priority, but we're going to go there because, you know,
makes sense.
So we're trying to work it all, together.
There's a really good process that Brutus Cannareggi, the director, has kind of spearheaded, and mm-hmm. with the assistance of Mike Maglio,
the engineer,
working with Carlos Ribello on the highway department, us here on the water sewer side. Brutus never plans to repave a road without making sure everything underground is new.
Correct.
He gives, you know, we speak with Columbia Gas or National Grid, and anything they have underground, they get the opportunity to work on it in that 2-year span as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people see after a water main is done, it doesn't get paved right away.
Right.
You know, Lincoln Street, for example. Everyone knows.
There's twofold reason for that. One is obviously to give every infrastructure the opportunity to get into that road and fix it, update whatever they need to do prior to repaving, because you don't want to open that road again.
Right.
The other is just the settling factor. You can never compact a road well enough to, after work like that,
after a construction,
to not have settling happen if you pave it right away.
Yeah.
You give it that year with all the weather and the traffic, and it's going to settle itself.
Yeah.
Then you come in and do your resurface the next year,
right,
and you have a beautiful road for years and years to come.
Right.
Yeah. That's sort of that, the give and take on that nightmare of, you know,
yeah,
the road looks like hell and you
a
have a lot of...
A little pain now, but the glory later.
Exactly. Because you'd get the same thing on the other hand if you pave the road right away, and then the next year you dig it up again for a water sewer break because you didn't replace the sewer line.
Right.
Or a gas leak because the gas company didn't come in and do their things.
I think the town actually has a bylaw so that anybody who does touch a road, with it, specifically within the first 5 years...
There's a
moratorium. Yep.
Yeah.
Right. They have to go through special process, get town council, I think, approval, if I remember, and then obviously do additional steps to make sure that they do return it back to as near as possible.
Exactly.
What it was.
Yep.
And it's worked out very well for the town over the course of time.
Yeah, so I think right now we're in we're coming into year three. We're starting, we're finishing up year three of the second 5-year program.
Right.
So Lincoln Street, we've done Pine Ridge, McIntosh, Sergeant, Dartmouth. That was this year's water main.
Mm-hmm.
So those will get paved next year.
Right.
We're starting the engineering department, starting design of Arlington Street. So Arlington Street,
Hutchinson. Right over here,
actually, right next to
in
this area.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that will be next spring's water main construction project.
Okay.
And there's a lot that goes into, it's not just a design a new water main and figure it out, but we're looking at, so actually coming up this week, you might see our sewer vector truck outside. So they're going to be cleaning out the sewer, cleaning out the drain. And then we're going to bring in a company that's going to TV. So send a camera down each line,
right,
make sure that
I've heard about that.
That everything's,
yep,
you know, looking good.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything that does need a repair, then we bring that back to the engineer's department. And they either put it in the water main contract or they'll do it ahead of the road contract,
mm-hmm,
get all that repaired. So there's a lot of steps in there. We're looking, like Jake said, we're looking at every piece of infrastructure that's under that road
that we have.
And then
coordinate with whether National Grid
or whoever's got underground utilities there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, big factor for the water main specifically is water breaks happen on the older mains.
Yes.
There's been several different materials used in the last, 100,
mm-hmm,
120 years on,
yep,
water mains.
Yeah.
And the new current install is ductile iron pipe, metal pipe, and it's very resilient. And once that's in the ground, knock on wood, we don't have problems with,
mm-hmm,
it afterwards. So we're basically in the process of trying to mitigate water breaks.
Sure.
So the more older pipe we can get replaced with this ductile iron pipe every year, it's in the 10 years I've worked here, I've gone from seeing a water break every 2 weeks to a water break every 3 months.
Right. Yeah.
And it's only getting better every year as we go. We have our problem areas. We know where they are. The old mains that were installed in town, some were cast iron. I think we've eliminated all the stovepipe.
Yeah.
That's all gone. But there's a lot of asbestos concrete.
Okay.
That is very brittle. It holds up forever until it receives some sort of outside shock.
And then all of a sudden it just...
And it breaks and it cracks and it continues to break. So you might fix an area and then 2 days later you're back 10 feet down the pipe fixing another area. And
right,
you can chase those for a while. So the more of that we can eliminate out of the system,
right,
the better off the upkeep of the infrastructure will be. It's going to be overall more cost effective,
mm-hmm,
in the long run for the town to upkeep everything with the 150, 200 miles of main we have in town.
Sure.
So...
Yeah, because I recall, I think it was the East-West cross streets. That was one of the last sections, if I recall, of the cast iron. And I know at the time, that was probably maybe 4 years ago. It was a few years ago, anyway.
Right.
That was being done, and that was one of the key pieces, because that was one of the last big sections of cast iron, as I recall.
Yeah, we still have some of it out there. The Franklin Housing Authority off of Wachusett Street has cast iron still there, actually. And that's actually before the state right now to be fully overhauled in there with a new design, completely new design of their water system in there and new hydrants and everything. So
okay,
in lieu of that fire actually that happened up there.
Yeah. Because that's one of the oddities that was coming up where Franklin Housing Authority, even the town council was being asked, you know, what can we do with it? Well, Housing Authority effectively is state.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's another layer of...
Franklin, it's a quasi, it's a state, you know,
organization.
We have communication with them. We have a good relationship with the folks that run it, but it's all their funding is from state level.
Sure. Yeah.
So yeah, to get back into the enterprise account, so obviously it's funding, our water main project. So about $1 million a year, is going into, new water main.
Right.
The process is we've always are keeping $1 million in that account as our, reserves, for God forbid if ever needed, we have it. And then any additional, we as water and sewer superintendents make recommendations to the council of this is what we would like to use that additional for capital expenses. So whether it be new vehicles, obviously, which we just had put in this past spring, different studies or, just different upgrades.
Yeah, the capital budget is something I follow, so the listeners should be able to recall to their various FinCom hearings, town council hearings, or the budget.
Yeah.
There's always a kind of a first cut at the capital because we get the free cash amount, and then after the winter and whatever the snow and ice has used, then we determine to take a second cut at it.
Yeah.
And that's where your trucks and other equipment and other capital expenses, licenses in particular for the technology that we all utilize in some way or another. So,
correct. Yeah. So some of the other big ones that we got, we're doing an upgrade of our SCADA system, starting kind of phase one. So SCADA is our supervisory control automation
and data acquisition, automation data acquisition.
Yeah.
SCADA. So it's an acronym.
Yes. Basically it's our system, like Jake was saying earlier. It's not tied into any network, but it's the system that monitors and runs all our wells
and sewer stations
stations, and notifies us if there's any issues.
And we'll have a separate conversation around the sewer.
So with that overhaul, we're currently existing purely off radio communications in town from point A to point B, utilizing the water tanks and the high points in town.
Okay.
With the town's recent
repeaters and
With the town's recent expansion of a lot of their fiber optics in town out to a lot of the schools and even for the tower at Forge Hill for this facility.
Yeah.
We're looking to tie a lot of our SCADA into the fiber optic.
Yes.
So it's going to increase our communication time. It's going to increase our reliability.
Sure.
Because really foggy days, lightning storms interfere with our communications greatly.
Yeah.
And now getting into this fiber system, we're going to be able to take a lot of the questions out of it, and it's going to communicate reliably no matter what the weather conditions are.
Yeah. Foggy day, not so much.
Yeah.
But get that fiber going, and you'll be able to do something automatically.
Yep. So we're looking at that. That's one of the key aspects of the new overhaul Then we're going to get on a new radio band. The government has recently enacted there's a bandwidth just for SCADA.
Oh, okay.
We're currently on a pretty broad spectrum, so anyone out there with CB radios, that can interfere with our radio system.
Okay.
We're getting onto a purely SCADA-driven radio band, and interference will drop drastically from that, too.
Because then it'd be isolated amongst your location versus other municipal locations. There'd be less overlap and stuff.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah.
As opposed to the CB, they could be anywhere.
Right. Yeah. So we're really that's a big feature. This year's capital investment was that overhaul for both departments.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then on a periodic basis, and it may be quarterly, at least annually, certainly within the enterprise, based upon what income's coming in from the water usage, what expenses you have, what the capital expenses are. You run the register, run the tape, so to speak, and say, the water rate stays the same, or looks like we're going to need to adjust that at some point.
Correct, so I think this year we had a water rate increase primarily driven by the new treatment plant at Grove Street.
Yep.
I believe there's one more rate increase.
I think there were two, if I recall, to confirm that. Yeah, based upon the treatment plant
coming
and it's coming on, and then the funding for it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but every year we're constantly looking at that and making sure that we're we're staying liquid, and liquid, we're keeping up with you know, where we are expense wise, and,
sure,
and going forward, yeah.
Yeah,
what we got coming up, you know, for improvements.
Yeah, yeah. And the irony of that whole situation is, as Brutus has actually explained to me, is the you know, we have all this rain in the summertime. Folks don't need to water their lawns or their gardens basically at all right now.
No.
So the fact of the matter is, we're not selling as much water as we were.
No. Although so you did have an increase because everybody was home from COVID. So.
Right.
We did. Yeah. So, yeah.
You start seeing how those balance out. You know, you get all this rain, but we didn't make what we needed to make to fund the capital and those improvements that we'd already budgeted for. So, you know, then you talk about other water increases. Like, that's the kind of trickle down effect that you need to think about.
Yeah, yeah. You're constantly looking at it. Absolutely. Making sure that we're on the right path.
Yeah. Because I said, going back to the water supply, I looked at this morning, and, you know, in the past month, my usage had dropped, and I sort of said to myself, well, yeah, okay, I haven't watered the garden, and we've had a whole bunch of rain. Absolutely.
And so, COVID did play a big part of it for us in town. We sold a lot of water this year. Yes. There was a lot more usage in the last year and a half because of COVID. And
people on the flip side, home, not going to work, wherever they were,
or school, or anything. And on the flip side, MWRA, that supplies water for Boston, was in the hole millions of dollars.
Yeah,
because they were not selling any water in Boston because no one was there doing business.
Nobody was in Boston, right?
They were losing a lot of money.
Yeah, they lost a ton.
Yeah,
because they had, you know, they're basing their operation on projected income, and then all of a sudden, that just got shot. Yeah, so
had an interesting effect for the small towns versus the cities, and all that in the last year.
Yes. Well, we've covered a wealth of info. I think I've covered all my questions, covered from the beginning, the treatment plant, we've covered the water flow, we've covered the annual report, we've covered the water smart system, we've covered other interesting aspects of the details, that's always the devil in the details in along the way. Is there something else perhaps from your side that we haven't covered that people should know, be aware of?
I think the one thing I'd like to touch on, I know for myself going through, I went through a high school program at Norfolk Aggie that was environmental science based. Mm-hmm. I went to college for environmental science. That was what my degree was in.
Sure.
I started with the DPW because I knew landscaping, and I came into the grounds department. Even with all my environmental background, I didn't know the water sewer world was a thing as far as a career goes.
Yeah.
With the acquisition of a few licenses, this can be a very lucrative career for someone. And we're facing a situation where this, not just in Franklin, like the country, this industry has 60% of its crew retiring in the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
So jobs are going to be open everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's job security. Mm-hmm. People never don't need their water. People will never not need sewage pumped away.
Right.
And it's an unknown sort of industry out there, and you know, it's not the most glamorous thing in the world.
No.
I won't argue that point, but it's a reliable.
Glamorous, but it's steady, and it's challenging because you've got something to do all the time.
Yeah, every day changes.
Yeah,
it's a different job. So it's people coming up, you know, high school kids, college age kids. This is a career path that not for everyone, but if you're unsure about which way to go, this is one way to look.
Sure.
There's gonna be plenty of opportunity coming up.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'd echo the same thing that Jake said. So I went to school for civil engineering, thinking I was going to design roads, airports, infrastructure that everyone sees.
Sure.
Got into classes and realized that, hey, I really liked hydraulics and how water moved and how sewage moved. So that's kind of where it led me in my career. But until then, I didn't really know it was an industry. So.
Yeah.
Well, just kind of took it for granted, I guess.
Sure. So. That's where, you know, people go to the faucet and they turn it on and the water's there. But they really don't think about what it takes to bring that there.
Yeah.
Until the day it's not there.
Until the day it's not there. Or the day when they open it, it's like, hey, what is this?
Yeah.
Something's wrong. Yeah. So when we get into the sewer side, that's all gravity based. That in itself is like, I mean, we know you've got pump stations to pump the water up so the water pressure stays, but everything on the sewer side, I mean, to a certain extent, you still have some pumps to lift it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all gravity.
Yeah, it's astounding engineering.
Yeah.
That'll be a whole separate discussion. So if you're listening and you want to tune back, by all means, we'll have another discussion around that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's a big, I think, big problem coming up in our industry is just the workforce, the aging workforce, and just trying to get, you know, the younger generation interested in just knowing about, you know, what water and sewer utilities do, and sure. that there's careers out there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, on behalf of the listeners who I hope have had as much interest as I have and will be coming back to this from time to time, thank you both for taking time to be as enlightening as you were.
Thanks for having us.
To experience, to share this. I've learned a whole lot today.
Thank you very much for having us. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.